should go watch out. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. It's really a pleasure to be here and to have the opportunity to hear most of the talks that I'm here. And I also appreciate that today is a very tough day, so I really appreciate that you already start at 10 o'clock coming here. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how one can witness order parameters and also dynamics. And indeed, when I was preparing this talk was a little bit in relation with the talks that I have here already before, and I want to give my perspective about these dynamics and about order parameters and detecting. So sometimes one thing that I like very much is the people of condensed matter. They are saying that we are always very nice in cold gases and so on. I think it's because we are having a lot of fun doing all this physics here. And this is how I see, indeed, this workshop and in general, this kind of community. Okay, so we are just feeding one to each other and smiling, and indeed, quantum optics, cold gases, quantum information, and condensed matter are very quite related. And I have to say that high energy physics is also entering into this field. I mean, it will take a little bit more time because they are a little bit more relaxed than normally, but I think that it's very nice to work in this field. So let me just say who is the people that I have the luck to work with them. So they are my group, my postdocs, Simone Pietro Gabriele Di Chiara, and PhD students Carlos and Julia Stasinska, that she's now here in the States also doing a stage. And these are the people in Barcelona that I also work with, Veronica Uffinger, Maciek Levenstein, and people, Montse Guillemas and Arthur Poiz. And the collaborations that we have is mostly with the people from the group of Ignacio Cirac, Uriol Romero Izar, which was previously my PhD student, Tomás Rochilde, Mateo Ritze, Mirta Rodriguez, Cristina Munchik, Eugene Polsik, Alejandro Muramatsu. We have started to work and other people. So what I'm going to talk today, so I'm going to talk about two different topics that I have prepared. One, it's involving dynamics. And the reason that I have chosen this topic, which is on the work that we were doing a couple of years ago, it's also because I want to give a perspective on dynamics which is a little bit different from the perspective and complementary, I think. So up to now, there has been very nice talks about this non-equilibrium dynamics in the sense of thermalization. And also, we had yesterday a very interesting talk in saying how this spreading of entanglement and this violation of the area law imposes several problems for computational of dynamics. And I want to take a different perspective, which is how this entanglement of propagation in strongly correlated systems is also a useful resource. And indeed, this is how we were looking at that, how entanglement propagates in a quantum many-body system. So how is this entanglement transferred and what that's useful for? And indeed, we were thinking in quantum communication and quantum information purposes. So we were having an idea of using ultra-cold gases as quantum simulators. And I'm going to talk mostly in spin one change on the whole talk, because this is a very nice system which has very different phases, which are not so trivial, and allows us to test our transfer of entanglement in all the phases and to see how different phases of a spin Hamiltonian will react in front of these transfers of entanglement. The second part of the talk is related to the work that we have been doing in the last 2 years or 1 year and a half, and we are still working on that, and it's going to treat out the problem of detection of quantum many-body systems. Because quantum many-body systems, of course, we all know in ultra-cold gases that there are three things that they are important, the preparation, manipulation, and detection. And if we want to use it, all of them, for any kind of quantum technology, these three steps are fundamental. So detection, it's not at all a trivial task. And indeed, I want to distinguish between detecting and discriminating quantum states, which is quite a different thing. And I want to show that we have a proposal of using a detection scheme so that it can be used in the lab, in which you can really measure order parameters of non-trivial phases. And again, I will use for that quantum spin one change. And also, if I have time, I will speak a little bit how you can use this method, which is very general, so it can be used to bosons, to fermions, in equilibrium, in non-equilibrium, etc. So also to detect the FFLO phase in balanced Fermi systems. And I will end up with the same questions that I'm starting. It's that if this method, which on top of that we will see it's a quantum non-demolition, so doesn't destroy the system, or destroy it very little as quantum mechanics allows us, will be a useful tool to test non-equilibrium dynamics and the things that they have been and they are now during this week exposing these two workshops. So, of course, there is the on the Bose-Hubbard model, normally we are We are all saying that this is a paradigmatic example of a quantum simulator, in the sense that you can study the phase transition between superfluid and Mott insulator. And indeed, this is the idea that this, I mean, I don't know if you all know, but originally this idea of putting, of the first proposal to do this, quantum simulator came with the idea of doing quantum computation. So the original paper of Ignacio Cirac and collaborators was to use this optical lattice in order to load an atom there, using the, of course, the seminal paper of Matthew Fisher, but with the idea of having really enough control to do quantum computation. So one can think in this system as another avenue, and to think that indeed, if you have two different magnetic, two different states on the atoms that you load there, you can immediately go to another kind of quantum simulator, which is a quantum simulator of magnetic systems. So this kind of Hamiltonian has been already experimentally used for me to. Experiments which are really a cornerstone. The first one is to study or to use quantum information, and this is the experiment of Trey Porter and collaborators, which I think you are so in the paper. But so in which what they do is they load these atoms there, and then they join two atoms in a single lattice site, and they do a collision. So and then in this way they have spin exchange interactions, and they can have quantum gates that they show indeed that they have this swap gate with a very high fidelity. But the same Hamiltonian can be used to do quantum magnetism, and this is the experiment of Emmanuel Bloch and collaborators, in which, although it's only done in a two double lattice using a super lattice structure, he sees this super exchange interaction in which the spins, they are not brought together, but just they have interactions and simulates quantum states. So this was a little bit the idea that we have, but indeed what we wanted to do came from an old idea from quantum information, in which Sugato was in the 2003 was considering a spin chain Hamiltonian and was considering the possibility to use this kind of model to transfer information. What does that mean? So you take your spin 1/2, you put it in an arbitrary state, whatever it is, you wait a little bit, and you expect to retrieve this state here. And of course, you have to compare it with something, and then you look which is the fidelity, and you have what it's a quantum benchmark, which is the fidelity is higher quantum than classically. That means that if you do it classically, which is you measure here, which is the state of this spin, take the telephone call, and arise to the person who is there, and repeat the experiment several times, you cannot reach a fidelity which is higher than 2/3. So you see that depending on the number of sites, the quantum spin chain can be used to improve this task. So we
are you going to define fidelity for those?
Yes, I'm going to define it now in a second, yes. Okay. So the idea that we were using here, or that we had after we saw this paper, is if we can use dynamics, and transfer of entanglement really as a resource, and if the quality of this entanglement transfer can be used to characterize a many-body system. So what do we mean by fidelity? So we will do it with a language that maybe is a little bit strange for some of you because it comes more from quantum information, but we are going to classify it very simple, that our spin chain is nothing else as a quantum channel, in the sense that we have a state initially, rho, given by a density matrix, and after I have done something in this state, which is characterized by a positive map, okay, I will have a state rho prime, and I will measure the fidelity, how far this output state rho prime is from rho. Okay? So my initial state will be my initial state of the spin chain, and I will have a state here, which I don't know, in the state one. I will do an evolution, which will be the Hamiltonian, for instance, a unitary evolution, and after a while, I will demand myself, which is the probability, the probability that I have retrieved this state here, and I will write the effect of the quantum channel on my state phi. So I have to trace all the particles except this one, okay, n, and then look the operation on that. And now I have this quantum. So I have this quantum benchmark, which is again this fidelity, so this is the map, okay? So I want to see the effect of this evolution, which will be the Hamiltonian evolution, nothing else, on the initial state, and I have to average, of course, over any possible initial state. And this is the fidelity, and I know that if it's above this limit, 2 divided d plus 1, where d is the dimension of the spin space, the fidelity is quantum. So I cannot do it classically, or I'm doing it better than classically. So We also, okay, we can do another thing. We can play another.
By dimension, you mean the Hilbert space of a single spin?
Of, yes, yes, yes. Okay, of each individual single spin. So now we can do another thing. We can say, okay, imagine that I have my quantum, a spin chain, and now I prepare here the first state of the chain with an external spin in a singlet, okay, maximally entangled state. And now, of course, I let my system to evolve, so I have my dynamics, which was here, and I look if this state will be entangled with the extreme, the other extreme of the singlet. So if I talk about quantum map, about the channel, I will do nothing on the first state because this one, it's out of the Hamiltonian evolution, and a map on the other one, and I will try to retrieve that. And then what I will do is to look for the entanglement between these two states. Sorry. I'm not very good. Okay, so and how I'm going to, what is going to be my quantum benchmark? Well, I will look for entanglement. So this is something that I can only transfer entanglement if I have a resource which is non-classical, because classically I cannot transfer. So I will look at the log negativity of my state, and if it's different from zero, I know that I have transferred a singlet. So indeed, we decided to do in the spin one chain, because the spin one chain is the easiest non-trivial example in which we have different phases. So we have a phase which is ferromagnetic, and then we have all these phases which have magnetization equal to zero. I will call it, I know it's badly from a condensed matter point of view, anti-ferromagnetic, because they are invariant. They don't violate time reversal, but they have magnetization zero, so sometimes I will say that they are anti-ferromagnetic, and they are very different. And I will explain why they are different, and we play exactly the same game. So we were looking at the spin one because it's, for us, an emblematic, strongly correlated quantum many-body systems, but also because this whole phase can be done with ultra-cold gases. And indeed, there is a very nice trick, which was also put forward in a paper of García Ripoll, Martín Delgado, and Ignacio Cirac, and has been used now recently, and they are using it now recently in a very nice experiment, that you can realize that the ground state on the antiferromagnetic phase will be corresponding to the highest excited state of the ferromagnetic phase. So you can prepare your states with the scattering length of the optical lattice here, but then you can prepare it in the highly excited state, and that will correspond to the ground state of the antiferromagnetic. So indeed, almost the whole phase diagram can be done with ultra-cold gases. So when we do that here, let me show you a little bit, which is a caricature of how are these different states in order to understand how is the transfer. So we have the ferromagnetic state, which is just a product state, so that's not so interesting. We have this dimerized state, this in the point P and a half here. It will be kind of dimers, perfect singlets between every pair of states. And of course, this is a caricature, so I don't want to go further. So this is the Haldane phase, also very famous by the Haldane conjecture, of a gap phase in which you find the AKLT point, in which you can express always your spin one as an MPS system with the spin one half particles in this ancillary state. And you have a critical phase in which there is a kind of trimerized order. And again, I want to repeat that this is a very a caricature. There is an emmatic phase, which is, I think, having some kind of academic interest, but it's just very restricted, and there is some discussions of it, if it's a different phase or not. I don't want to enter on that. Okay, so what we are doing now is we have our state. So we look for the ground state of our system for the phase that is given by the angle theta. Now we prepare it with a singlet state. We let the system to evolve, and we measure the log negativity and the fidelity. So you see, and what we have to do it, we use the ground state, we have to calculate it using MPS or DMGR algorithm, and then we use time-dependent DMGR in order to propagate on time. So when we are doing that, we are doing something which for us it was interesting. We are proving at the same time how is the ground state properties of the system, because the transfer will depend, of course, of how is the ground state properties. But of course, we are out of the ground state because we have prepared an excitation. So it's very different from quenching, in which you make a very big difference in the Hamiltonian. Here we have our Hamiltonian, but the state, the ground state, it's not anymore in the ground, the state. Initial state, it's not anymore in the ground state, so we are probing also the excitations in a single shot. So now let's see how it is, for instance, in two typical cases. So we look in the case that we have a dimerized phase, just P and a half, and we change the number of spins on the chain, And the first thing is that we can immediately see, just looking at the fidelity, the dimerization of the system, because that corresponds to have two spins, three, four, five, six, seven. So if we have an odd number of spins, you cannot do a perfect number of singlets, and therefore the system doesn't transfer at all. Okay? And if we look,
there must be a time aspect to this.
Yes, there is a time. Yeah, yeah. This is, I want to show, this is time versus the number of spins that we have. Okay, so we propagate and we will fix the number of spins. So for instance, when we say 25, it means that I put here, and when I have a maximum here, that then it will be a minimum after a while because I will have reflections. I stop my simulation and I say at this time, this is the maximal transfer I can have. Okay, and if I go to 80, I will have my border at 80 and I will wait until I have the transfer. Yes.
So all of this transfer is done by a quench. That's what you're. So like,
well, what do you? I mean, my Hamiltonian is the Hamiltonian of the system. Yes, I prepare an initial state, and then suddenly I put the Hamiltonian on.
Oh, I see. Yeah, in principle, you could have thought that you could maybe do a transfer adiabatically, and then use.
Yes, you can do these adiabatically things to do perfect transfer. But here we just wanted to use the Hamiltonian and see which are the properties. So, for instance, if you look at that, it's quite. I found it nice because. You see, the transfer is like that. So we have dimers. It has to be, so my initial state is any, but I will never find, okay, so let's see here, this is 5, all right? So I will find that my state has transferred to here, but it will never be in 4 or in 3. So I never break the dimers. I cannot put this transfer like I have, because this is too energetic. So the system doesn't want to break this dimer, have this state here, and to have the other dimers there. So it really swaps the dimers. So it jumps from here to here to here to here. And the transfer, you see, it's quite good, and you can see it here. So after 25, you have transfer practically. Well, this is time as in terms of J, okay, parameter. And if you compare, for instance, with a ferromagnetic site, so how we understand that? Well, we understand that if you see, these are the excitations. Of all the excitations are propagating with the same speed, which it's very close to the speed of sound. We look at without the lattice. Okay? But if we are in this ferromagnetic phase, for instance, we see that there are a lot of excitations, that this spectrum is not anymore linear, all right? So the excitations are very different, and we are not able to transfer this system. So indeed, already if we have 25 sites, we are from here, and if we go below, it's much better to do a transfer which is classical and not quantum.
Now, in this way of characterizing the fidelity, 50% would essentially be what you would have if you were just random.
No, 2/3 indeed. For spin one, 50%. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what I'm wondering is, in the case
where you've got
an odd number, why is it even worse than that? Why is it even worse than random?
Because you are not repeating that several times. All right. So this is. You have to understand that, like, if you have your state, you have prepared it randomly, you make a measurement, only single one, well, your classical possibility that this corresponds to the state that you have prepared, it's small. If you repeat your measurement and you change, you will have better and better estimate. But here it's like, in this case, you were only making a measurement, all right? So it's worse in this respect. It's worse.
Specific.
Because it doesn't go. Or if you want to know it like that, because you are making such a. So you are exciting. Although this is part of. These are low energy excitations, but not all of them, they transfer with the same velocity, and you lose your signal in some way. Well, if you have a kind of coherent transfer, you have a very good transmission, very, very high transmission.
And these results are essentially for everything being perfect. That is, the temperature zero.
Yes,
and,
this is. We are in the mode state. Everything is. Yes,
right.
Yes.
So this is the best you could ever.
Well, you can play a little bit and say, okay, I want to have a fidelity of one, and we know how to do it. But then you have to change things
then
and
you
play.
Have to do some
yes, you have to do manipulation.
If
so this is exactly. If you apply the Hamiltonian straight. So the only thing that I want to show here is, of course, I mean we limited our calculations here in the case of the dimer for 80 sites, but then we plot this, or we try to see how is this thermodynamic limit, and we see that the fidelity is always bigger than 0.5, which is the classical fidelity. So even if you have infinite systems a priori, you will have a transfer which is better than classical, which here it will never happen, okay? So now we have done that, and we say.
That's just an extrapolation? Or
yes, this is, no. This is an extrapolation. The only thing that we look, it's an extrapolation. We have all these points, okay? And we fit it in a way that we see that if we go to n equal to infinite, this fidelity, this curve, okay, goes to 0.56. So it's not.
That says the wave packet propagates down the chain with absolutely no dispersion.
Well, but the dispersion, it's pretty small. Eh? Yes.
Small, but
yeah, no, yes. Yes.
Means it's zero.
Yes.
Strong.
You're right.
Do you think that's really true?
No, I don't know. But I don't know if it will be always a part which goes a little bit above the classical. I don't know.
But the ferromagnetic case goes to the classical.
Oh, yes, and it's much below the classical. Okay, so let me show you how it's now. We do that for the whole phase diagram, and we say, okay, so if we have seen that, let me see how we'll... No, this is the bad one.
I'm slightly confused about your initial wave function. So.
Okay, my initial wave function is I go to... Sorry. I have to, yes. My initial wave function is I take a chain which has n spins, okay? And I calculate it in the ground. I give an angle theta and I calculate the ground state on this here, okay? And now I couple, I couple the first spin of my chain of the ground state of this Hamiltonian to a singlet. And I prepare this in a singlet state. So I have changed this, right? It's not anymore. This system of here, it's not anymore the ground state of the Hamiltonian, because this I have forced to be these two spins in a singlet. Now at t equals zero, I put my Hamiltonian that it's acting on the chain. Okay, so no, this guy I don't touch it.
Okay, first you say that you have the ground state over there, but then how do you force that to be a singlet?
No, because I have, let's say like that. I put, if you want, this is a. Just let me think how I'm doing it. No, this is, you are right, I mean, but this is why it evolves. If not, it will not evolve, all right? So this is not the ground state. So I have forced, I have modified my first state of the chain. And then I just let it evolve under this Hamiltonian. If it was the ground state, of course, it will be staying. Nothing will happen. So it evolves. So we have a dynamical evolution because this is an excitation. It's if I have my spin chain and now one of the spins, I change it, okay? I have prepared it in the ground state. Imagine that it's the ferro. I have prepared it in the ferro, and now I make an excitation, and I flip this spin. And now I let the system to evolve under this Hamiltonian, OK?
Your edge, the spin that you start with, the one to the left of the...
This is never coupled. This doesn't evolve.
So, but this is in the singlet with the first spin?
Yes, and I want
both
to see...
Both are spin ones, right?
Sorry?
Both are spin ones.
Both have spin ones. Okay.
Because in principle, you could think of doing this with the spin half, and then it would be in the ground state because.
Yes, but I don't want that. I want just really to see how. I really want to see that if I have prepared my chain, I couple one state of my chain in a singlet with an external state, and now I let the system to evolve. I want to see if this guy and this guy, they are in a singlet state. So really, so this is the propagation of entanglement. All right. After a while, this is not anymore that they are close; they are very far away. Okay, and we will see that indeed you are able to create a singlet between this guy and this guy.
The preparation of the state probably disturbs the other spins as well.
Why? No.
The neighboring ones, because they were.
No, but I do a local excitation.
You put a product state.
Yes, but imagine that I'm able to. I imagine that.
The rest of the chain is in the ground state?
Yes, but.
So you have a singlet and then a product with the rest of the chain in its ground state.
Well, it's not. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yeah. It's exactly that what I mean.
You freeze everything else.
Exactly. Imagine that I'm able to experimentally to modify only my first spin in such a way. So my initial state is this singlet in a product state with the ground state of the chain for the other.
The remainder.
Yes.
So
exactly.
But the remainder's ground state was not decoupled from the first one.
No.
So that must also
well,
have gotten
listen,
excited.
If not, don't worry. I mean, imagine that I say I have this, okay, my ground state of these spins, all right? So from here to here.
Oh, you leave the first one out completely?
Okay, and now I do evolution, this evolution on all these states of here, right? Of S, that it will be here one, sorry. So I'm not touching this one.
The preparation of the ground state involved only, not the first spin, but the rest only, not the first two spins.
No, these ones, they are not touched. I have a perfect manipulation of my state experimentally, and I move this state to prepare it in a singlet with a star which is not belonging to my chain.
This
I don't touch it. I don't care.
So the process is a process that will follow from 2 to n.
Yes.
So
And I attach it to something which is not a state of the ground state, and that makes it to evolve. So I have, it's a quenching, but not a quenching of the Hamiltonian, but an initial state which is not ground state, and therefore it will evolve under the Hamiltonian. So if I do that for all the, okay, so now I do it for any angle theta, okay, and let me show it here. I look, the fidelity you have to remember that it has a classical benchmark, so it cannot go below 0.03, which is here, and the log negativity. So the transfer of a singlet or the transfer of an arbitrary state, we have to do a hard measure, it doesn't matter. And now we check on the different phases, and we see something that, well, has very nice features. So we see that in the dimer phase, we have a very good transfer, as we have seen it already in this picture. In the critical phase, the transfer is pretty good. In the Haldane phase, the transfer of a singlet is zero, it's impossible. And funny enough, in this kind of pneumatic phase, again, the transfer of entanglement is zero.
Okay. And how many?
I think it's for 30, because the simulations become very tedious in the Haldane phase. So we had to compare, of course, the same length in the critical. Sorry.
No.
This is just like that. Okay. So
what's the significance? 50% is in if you did a classical, and you were saying that 30% was some.
This the fidelity. There are two things. All right. This is the fidelity in the classical or quantum benchmark. Above this thing, it will be quantum.
Right.
And the fidelity cannot go to zero. And I will tell you, because if you have a maximally entangled state and you trace one, the other one, it's in the maximal mixed state, the identity, which for spin one, it's 1/3, okay? So this will be the worst that you can have. So the fidelity, you cannot go to zero, okay?
It's the worst you can have if things were going.
You don't know anything about the state, which is your thermal state. You know, at least with probability 1/3, you will guess it.
But the Haldane state does worse than.
No. Haldane, this is the red dots. This is the log negativity. So this is the transfer of real entanglement.
Oh, right.
And this, there is not, the classical benchmark is zero, and the Haldane phase hits zero. So we are not able to transfer any singlet in the Haldane phase. I have to say that we don't know why. I think this is related with these H states, but I have to say the truth is we don't know why.
Would that be true for singlet excitations of any extent? So are you saying that you cannot transfer singlets?
Any excitation, because.
So even if you would make a singlet, say, with a distance of two sites apart, starting at the start of the chain, you would also have no transfer of the singlet?
Yes, I think so. But it's not transfer. So if I show, I don't have it here, but if I try to show these plots that I had before, okay? Well, I don't know if I have three sites or very small thing, because this is very complicated.
Does not depend on the shape of the initial state.
No, because for instance, when we put the initial state, we choose any possible initial state. So we do the fidelity is a hard measure of SU2, okay? Because you cannot fix the state. That depends, of course, the fidelity of transfer will depend on which is the initial state that you want to transfer. So you have to average this, and this you do it taking over any possible initial state. Okay, so, yes.
Now, looking at this picture is really quite interesting. Some of the, which you might call, well, the phase boundaries represent things that look quite sharp in changes in the fidelity or in the log
negativity. Yes.
And others don't.
Yes.
That is, if I was to look at the change from the dimer to the Haldane phase, I would look at that and say nothing happened. But if I look at the change from the Haldane to the critical phase, I would say, wow, there's a phase transition there.
Yes. No, this is clear that there is a kind of significant, how we understand it, for instance, I mean, we were quite seriously doing the, looking at the ground states, and you know there is all this debate. So what I think we understand that, saying that, well, the ground state, there is no difference, but here we are looking also at the excitations. So it's possible that the excitations, okay, they are not continuous when you go from this part of the dimer to the ferromagnetic. And this is also, I think, a little bit in agreement with other papers in which you have a change in the excitation spectrum. So this is the thing. I mean, it's nice because you are looking at two things at the same time, ground state and excitations, but you cannot say exactly which part is collaborating here. So let me move to the...
Could it be that actually, if I think of what you're doing in the Haldane phase, is you're actually creating a spin half excitation, right? because you have your edge state, and,
yes,
and you're creating, and the spin half excitation is confined in the Haldane phase. So
yes, I think it's related to this H. Yes.
For only maybe these two or three lattice constants.
Yes, I think this is also what we realize, that why this is so extremely low, because you have these H states which are spin one half there, and you cannot couple
and
them.
Suddenly, when you put in the new states, you're creating this in the bulk, essentially, because
yes,
you're making this by force, the bulk, and this spin half excitation just runs through the edge.
Yes, I think it's related to that. I'm sorry that I cannot go further in this respect, but I think it's related to that also. That was our... Yeah.
And this means there's a transition between dimer and Haldane, a simple smear at this diagram, but in reality there is a sharp phase transition if you went to much longer systems.
Yes, it can be also, yes. Yes, I mean, this is a very rough, it's a way to witness some magnetic ordering, but I don't want to say that this is an order parameter or something like that. It's just looking at ground state and excitations in front of this, how entanglement propagates in a spin chain, okay? But, so let me go to the... second part, in which I will go to these other parameters in which a little bit more of detail. And I will also talk about the spin one, so this is the thing that I want to explain. So for a while we were thinking also on, well, also motivated a little bit for all these results and so on, how you can detect these states experimentally, okay? And at the time it was this nice paper also from Hood and Demler, and who else is in the noise correlations, and we were interested in saying, well, if we have this spin one, for instance, in which we have, of course, order parameter for me, that I'm not a person from condensed matter, it's a kind of strange concept, no? I think everything can be, it's a local operator, which you expect that the expectation value will change when you have a broken symmetry, but you don't know which is the order parameter normally. So there are some of them which are very easy, so if you have a magnetic system in which the magnetization is different from zero, so the ferromagnetic, you immediately see that the order parameter can see magnetization. But if you want to look, for instance, in the spin one phases, and you want to look which is the order parameter, okay, easily, how can you measure? This is not so clear what you will measure. So on top of that, we have been working a little bit on discrimination, and the detection and discrimination is very difficult. Because detection in many body systems, I mean, of course you cannot do, I think, I don't know, you know better, but a priori you cannot do any kind of tomography, because you have so many parameters and the system is so big that you will never finish to have a tomographic estimation, except in very particular cases, okay? But in general, when you will have a complicated many body system, tomography is out of question. Discrimination is also out of question, because discrimination assumes that you have a lot of copies of the same system, okay? And you want to think or propose a method in which you can learn by measuring simultaneously on this system, okay? And this is not normally the case, because most of the methods destroy the system, so you cannot do these adaptive techniques on that.
I don't think I'm understanding what you mean by discrimination.
Well, normally when we are doing discrimination, it's that I give you two spin one half particles, okay, many copies of them, and I ask you, how can you distinguish between these two? Okay, and now you can think about which are the kind of operations that you can do, okay, and there are several techniques. You can say, okay, I will do operations in which I will use what I have learned before to prepare my next operator, okay? So these are kind of adaptive methods. And on this way you can reach bounds which are pretty good in order to distinguish these two states, okay? This is what it's normally understood in quantum state discrimination. But you do that when you have many copies of a very simple system, okay? And this is not the case in these many body states. You don't have many copies, and the system is very complex, so you cannot play these tricks. So you want to have detection methods which are easy and that you can apply. So indeed also, we would like to have a detection method that discriminates very well between different phases, so it has to be able in some way to measure order parameters of non-trivial phases. Okay, so the thing that we were thinking about is, okay, so, well, this is what I'm saying, so you have a large number of states, so full tomography it's not possible. often it happens also that in the many body systems, there is not an analytical form of the state. So therefore, you cannot compare it with anything because you don't know how is the state analytically. Okay, so it also doesn't allow to you this discrimination between two states that you know, because these states you don't know how they are. So it looks like a very nice way to go. It's to try to look really for order parameters in the case that you don't have any topological state. So when you have local order parameters there. So indeed, we were looking for a system which allows us to find these non-trivial phases, and which has a spatial resolution, because the spatial resolution, we will see, gives us access to high order correlations, which works independently for fermions and bosons. Top of that, which is non-demolishing, so allows us to make several measures on the same system. And since it's not demolition, non-demolishing allows for look for time-dependent correlations. Okay, so I want to explain you the method, which is very simple. And the method is based in a Faraday effect, which is a very old effect discovered by Faraday two centuries ago, in which you say that if you put light, which is polarized, through a magnetic medium, and you look how is the light outside, the polarization of the light rotates. Okay? And of course, if you say, well, you have magnetic systems, and you do the same, you put light, okay? So you have to put a light which is not absorbed, so you have to have an off-resonant interaction. You will see that if your system is magnetic, you have a ferromagnetic system, the polarization of the light will be rotated. You can measure this polarization, and you will learn about the magnetization of your system. So normally, when you write that, formally, you have to go to you write the light in the Stokes representation, which is the Schwinger representation, in other words. So, and then you can write your Hamiltonian, which is very simple, if I'm able to, okay. So you have your light with your Stokes operator. Since the light is polarized, what you do is one of the Stokes operators, it's just a classical value. It's a polarization of the light when it enters, and you have only two quadratures of the light, which are the other two polarizations of Stokes operators. And for the atoms, you define the atoms with a pseudo spin, okay? And this is a collective spin of the atoms. And you work a little bit and take the papers, and you see that you have a Hamiltonian of interaction, which is just like that, okay? So it's linear on the magnetization of your sample, and linear on the quadrature of the electromagnetic field. And now if you want to see the effects of this Hamiltonian, you just realize that you do time evolution on this interaction Hamiltonian, and you realize something very nice, that indeed this Faraday interaction, well written, the only thing that it does is maps the polarization into spin polarization and the other way around. So if you want to read the polarization of your sample, it's enough that you read the polarization of the light, okay, or the magnetization of your sample, it's enough that you read the polarization of the light after the light has traveled the sample. And up to here, this is very nice, it's classical, but then you realize that this mapping is also quantum, because you can also map quantum fluctuations into quantum fluctuations, right? And here is where all the power of the method comes, because you can map any moment to any moment. So of course, if you have a spin Hamiltonian, which commutes with a total magnetization of your sample, by definition, this measure is not demolishing. So we wanted to use this method to see how it works. And then what we were thinking is, well, if you have a magnetization which is zero, okay, so like in the spin one that we were saying, of course that will not help you because the total magnetization is zero, you will not see anything. But what you can do with light is you can put the light in the standing wave configuration, so you can give to the light a spatial shape. And if you give to the light a spatial shape, okay, so you have a cosinus square which grids the magnetization of the field, you realize immediately that you reach something very similar to the, yeah, so you have access to spin-spin correlations in different sites of your sample, A and J, and you have an extra parameter, which is this dephase of the standing wave with the optical lattice, which gives you a lot of information about the system. And this is a cartoon in which you see it very easily. So imagine that we have our diamond state, for instance, and we put our standing wave configuration in such a way that we read only one of each diamond state. So the magnetization, it's still zero. But now if you look at the fluctuation, since we are probing only one of the diamond states of the singlet, the fluctuation of magnetization is zero. Well, if you read It's not zero, sorry. Well, if you have your standing wave configuration in such a way that you read both states of the singlet with the same intensity, then you will see that the fluctuations are zero also. So can we use this kind of thing to... I think that I should do it manually. I don't know where I am. So this spatial resolution, indeed, we want to show that helps us to really to look for these faces that I was talking before, in a way which is quite precise. I mean, and also, but I will not talk today, Tommaso Rochilde was using that together with us in order to detect also, for instance, the FFLO phase in imbalanced Fermi systems, which are very nice results. So let me show you what we do. So we take our system. Again, we prepare now. We are not doing any kind of transfer. We prepare the ground state. Okay, and we shine it with this standing wave configuration. We read on the light after it goes out, okay, and we look which are the fluctuations. And we do it for the different phases, so in the dimer, in the Haldane, and in the critical, for instance, which we know that they have total magnetization equal to zero. And we see that there are some features here. Well, first of all, if we do it for the ferromagnetic, this peak will disappear. So this is the periodicity of the standing light, and of course, at the same periodicity of the optical lattices measures the magnetism, okay? So in the ferromagnetic, this peak will be zero, and this is measured that this is antiferromagnetic state. But we have here these two small signals, which are very high in the critical phase, zero in the Haldane phase, is a phase which doesn't have any kind of structure, and they appear also in the dimer phase. So we want to know if this, indeed, that was motivated also by a talk with Hutalman a few years ago, in which we're saying, well, you see some differences, but can you go a little bit further? And we were looking at what is these differences mean here. Okay, so let me focus just in this critical phase of here. So we have the critical phase, and this is the standing wave light with different wave vectors, and this is the phase between the standing wave and the optical lattice. Okay. And now we realize that, well, it's not surprising, but these peaks are just at the soft modes of this critical phase. So we were looking for the excitations, and we found this paper, very nice paper, of Andreas Lauhi, Schmidt, and Simon Treves, in which they were looking exactly at this critical phase. And they say that they can clarify that the dominant correlation function in this phase is of the spin quadrupolar. So you don't have spin-spin correlations, but you have to go to the quadrupolar correlations, and they were explaining why. So we wanted to see if we can see these kind of things, although our method will be spin-spin correlations and no quadrupolar correlations. So what we did is that since these are the soft modes, exactly, that corresponds to this k equal 2 pi over 3, what we are doing now is just measuring how is the variation of the signal when we change alpha, so the phase between the optical lattice and the standing wave. Okay, and now we take something very simple. So we say, okay, let's take the maximal signal and subtract the minimal signal. So like if we were doing an interferometer signal. And then we take these two values. So we subtract the signal for the soft mode at 5/4, which is exactly this maximum, minus 1/2. And this is an analytical expression. You can work a little bit of algebra, and you end up with this expression in which I want to show you that you only have spin-spin correlations. And now we plot it, and we look if that behaves as an order parameter. And these are the black dots here. Okay, and it signals the phase just between the Haldane and the critical. And now we look if, of course, if it's a real order parameter, this point of here has to go to zero, because it has to be only different from zero when you cross. You have the broken symmetry. So we look at these finite size effects, and we see that this point indeed goes like 1 over L. So in the thermodynamic limit, it goes to zero. So we have an expression, closed expression, which shows, which is, well, an order parameter, shows exactly where is the phase, and it's much better than the structure factor. Although it doesn't have any quadrupolar correction. Okay, so this was something that was surprising us a little bit. So we did the same with the dimer phase. So we look at the signals here, and these signals are a 0.25, which is logical because this is the dimerized structure, or 0.75 is the reverse. So we look indeed here, the variations of this signal along this line, along this line of here. And it's again a sinusoidal, so we take the maximum, the minus, the minimum, and we end up also with this kind of order parameter. It's a little bit curious because when you do structure factor and all these things, you always have factors which are the difference between two points. Okay, so all your factors are m minus n. Okay, but we always find factors which are m plus n. But this is not bad because also shows the periodicity. Okay, so this sinus shows the periodicity too, this part of here. And we do again, so this is our order system, and we compare with the typical dimer order parameter, which is what it's used for the dimerization, and we see that it points maximum in the place where it should be maximum, and this, again, even for the dimerization, you have to go to finite order effects, so you have to subtract these two things will go to zero for a sufficiently long scale. So we see that this method, to our surprise, is quite precise, not only to see if the system is different quantitatively, but also qualitatively. So it gives order parameters of non-magnetic.
Yes, sorry,
yes, 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 go ahead.
You mentioned that you can calculate any moment.
Yes.
So why can't you just calculate the...
Okay, in the spin one, because this is rotationally invariant, any odd moment will be equal to zero. Okay? So you will have only even.
No.
But you can do it at the level of, yes, you can do it. And at the level of the experiment, so to say, this is exactly the same value, okay? Because you just measure expectation values, okay, of the light quadrature, and then you have all the moments at your disposal.
You can calculate pneumatic correlations also.
Yes. We didn't calculate it because already without the pneumatic, we are on, yes, we can calculate this pneumatic quadruple order.
Right.
But we really didn't need it. No, I mean, this is what for us was surprising, that there is not need of this quadrupolar order to see the critical phase.
But that's probably more dominant than if you look at the decay exponent probably.
Well, at this point they are identical, no? We know that this they are identical, the quadrupolar in the phase transition. Okay? The spin and the quadrupolar they are equal. So this is the results. So if you look at here, sorry, so at this point, which is, if you look at here, in this point, they are equal. And it's true that after the quadrupolar, it's higher. Yes? Yeah, but what we are trying to say, I mean, the problem is that if you were considering that only here, you couldn't, because this is a structure factor in some way. And listen, we are not doing the structure factor. We are doing something which is a little bit different, okay? So if you look only that here on the structure factor, you don't see the correct order parameter. But if you look in the way that we are looking, we find something which is an order parameter as thin as good as any other in the sense that it's precise. It marks really the phase transition. Yes?
How long a chain is this?
Okay, 130 sites we did it. Okay, so this is 18 sites, and we checked that our results are identical to the results that they have for 18 sites, but our simulations, they go 130 sites, so they are long, yes. Because we wanted also to check these finite size effects and scaling and so on, so it has to be precise.
So the reason I was asking was I'm looking at that picture in the upper right, and it's got some very sharp features.
Yes.
And I guess I would expect that no feature could be significantly sharper on that scale than 1/(1/N of sites. But at 130, that looks quite reasonable. Is that right? Is it my intuition right about that? That if this was only 20 sites, then I wouldn't expect a feature that
yes.
was
yes.
sharper.
Yes, yeah, if it's very sharp, yes, but yes.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, again, I'm sorry, I'm not a smarter person, so for us it was very surprising. I mean, if you ask me why, I mean, of course we understand that this this difference between the standing, probing the optical lattice by something which doesn't have the same periodicity or have the same periodicity or have a given periodicity, but its delay gives you information. But that this information is exactly this soft mode course of the excitations. I have to say that we found it very nice, but we are not able to understand exactly why, and why we can have this order parameter, which is different from the structure order parameter, and gives so well the boundaries, okay, of the, and I don't think this is anything at all related with the spin one, okay, so this is a very general method, so it should work for other systems, and this is what we are trying. So, well, let me just finish very shortly, so I don't want to show. So this is the work mostly done by Tommaso, in which we were using it for the signature, but I don't want to go to that. I want to finish coming back to the correlations and to these dynamics. So if we have a method which is practically non-demolishing, because we are demolishing very small, very little the system, of course the next thing that you think is that method will allow you to go for dynamical correlations and will allow you to measure really how is the dynamics of your system in vivo, okay? So you want to see correlations on different points of the space and at different times. So what you have to do is just repump if you want the system, okay? But we wanted to apply some of the ideas that they are very open and we are working on that. So you can see very easily that if you do that, you will end up having the dynamical, something similar to the dynamical structure factor, which is not the same. And therefore, you will have access to this spectrum of excitations. But what we wanted to do, indeed, is that, and we were thinking, is that what happens if instead of measuring, okay, instead of reading the fluctuations, measuring, and after a while, read again and measure, we read our fluctuations and you store them in a quantum memory and you don't touch them, okay? And after a while, you do the same process, you send light, the system has evolved because you have an evolution, you read now the correlations, you pass it through the memory again and you read really the expectation value of, you have really time, 2-point time correlations there. Well, this is a very nice proposal. I have to tell you why, because it allows you something that at least I think it's quite new. It's that you can't a priori just modifying your system here, modify your system there. Okay, so this is really a quantum manipulation of the system. So you are not only acting on the system, you are acting on an ancilla, and you know that you have this access. So you can, for instance, and we think you can probe the dynamics of the system out of equilibrium, and you can manipulate the dynamics of the system out of equilibrium through this quantum memory. So, of course, this is work in progress and what we have been doing. So well, when you write all the equations and you look at everything at the end, you end up having fluctuations of the light which are proportional to the commutator of this operator, anti-commutator, sorry, of these two variables. Okay. And so what we were doing is just showing it for a toy model. So we have a lattice of plaquettes of spin 1/2, and then we have all the our Hamiltonian here, okay, which is this spin-spin Hamiltonian, and now you have all your spin 2, and then you have spin 1 and spin 0, and you want to see all the excitations. And if you do it, but that was just, this is a toy model that we have used. So depending on how you shine the light here, you will have access to probe all these excitations. And we show it like that. So we took our plaquette, and if you shine you know that here you have these spin 1/2s which are not orthogonal to another. So if you shine light in one of the singlets, you have access to this excitation here, these two peaks. If you shine your light in these two spins of here, you have access to this peak of here, so in the spectrum, after you have done. And if you do it on the other side, you have access to your other peak. So altogether, you can have access to all the excitations through this time-dependent spectroscopy. And I want to finish here. So I just want to summarize. I want to say that, indeed, what I will try to say today is that entanglement transfer, it's not only a bad thing. It can be used as a resource in many body systems. And this quantum Faraday effect can be also maybe used to as a tool to look for this out of equilibrium many body dynamics. Thank you very much for your attention.
I have sort of two questions. The first is, so as I understand it, that this Faraday scheme is non-demolition because on the assumption that the total sigma z of the system is conserved, right?
No, indeed, because you are, no. I didn't want to enter into details, but of course when you put a standing light, the total magnetization, it's not conserved, so you have a small evolution, yes. But it's very small, so we have checked it and you destroy very little the system, so at...
But if you're sort of focusing on just like two or three sites, if you actually had like sharp individual site resolution, then presumably you get more and more non-demolition, right? As you... So is that
No. This is very different. For instance, if you compare, I mean, these new proposals, okay, of single lattice addressability, which you have access to all, the, and this is an amazing tool, but this is completely destructive, all right? So
yeah,
it's a compromise, exactly. So what do you want to look? So if you say, how can we look for topological phases in this way, we don't know how yet. I think we will be able, but we don't know how yet because you have access to all moments, all right? So you can go to high things, but.
Yeah, sort of the other question I had, which is sort of related to this, is if you think about the system in a harmonic trap, you know, you're going to be averaging over a wide range of phases. So have you thought about how that might sort of make your...
But the main, yeah, this is a very good question. I mean, how that happens when you have, but the main features survive. So we have tried it when we have a phase, we have an harmonic trap there, and still we don't see the features so sharp, but they survive.
You said you have access to bond moments. I mean, can you calculate some kind of string order parameters?
No, like that, no, because we will have access to S1, S2, S3, S4, S5, Z, okay? But you will not have this A to the EI pi, so the string order parameter as such, no. Although now, if you ask me, my intuition is I think that probably you can see it also without this order parameter. So it's not a unique order parameter for anything. So the string order parameter detects definitely this Haldane phase.
I don't mean...
Yeah.
Particularly for
hard investors. I think probably you will have access to something, yes. But we don't know yet, yes.
More questions? All right, people can hit some gas.
Thank you.